for him to go. Great, he muttered under his breath, easing back to the parapet and looking down into the street. More stormtroopers had joined the first squad now and were beginning to sift through the stunned crowd of people caught in the trap. Behind them, two squads from the other direction of the T-junction had moved in to seal off the rear of the street. Luke's erstwhile shadow, a blaster now gripped in his hand, was pushing his way through the crowd, making for the other robed figure Luke had noticed earlier. The other robed figure? Luke bit at his lip. It would be a rather unfriendly trick to play on a totally innocent bystander. But on the other hand, the Imperials obviously knew who they were looking for, and just as obviously wanted him alive. Putting the man down there in deadly danger, he knew, would be unacceptable behavior for a Jedi. Luke could only hope that inconveniencing him wouldn't fall under the same heading. Gritting his teeth, he reached out with the Force and plucked the blaster from the Shadow's hand. Spinning it low over the heads of the crowd, he dropped it squarely into the other robed figure's hand. The Shadow shouted to the stormtroopers, but what had begun as a call of triumph quickly became a screech of warning. Focusing the Force with all the control he could manage, Luke turned the blaster back toward its former owner and fired. Fired safely over the crowd, of course. There was no possible way for him to aim accurately enough to hit the Imperial, even if he'd wanted to. But even a clean miss was enough to jolt the stormtroopers into action. The Imperials, who'd been checking faces and IDs, abandoned their task to push through the crowd toward the man in the robe, while those guarding the ends of the street hurried forward into backup positions. It was not surprisingly too much for the man in the robe. Shaking away the blaster that had inexplicably become attached to his hand, he slipped past the frozen onlookers beside him and disappeared into a narrow alleyway. Luke didn't wait to see any more. The minute anyone got a good look at the fleeing man's face, the diversion would be over, and he had to be off this roof and on his way to the landing field before that happened. Sidling to the edge of his narrow ledge, he looked down. It didn't look promising. Built to withstand 200-kilometer winds, it was perfectly smooth, with no protuberances that could get caught in eddy currents. Nor were there any windows, service doors, or other openings visible. That at least shouldn't be a problem. He could cut himself a makeshift doorway with his lightsaber if it came to that. The real question was how to get out of range of the Imperial's trap before they started hunting him in earnest. He glanced back. And he had to do it fast. From the direction of the official landing area at the far end of the city, the distant specks of airspeeders had begun to appear over the squat city buildings. He couldn't drop back down on the street side without attracting unwelcome attention. He couldn't crawl along the narrow upper edge of the shield barrier, at least not fast enough to get out of sight before the airspeeders got here, which left him only one direction. Down. But not necessarily straight down. He squinted into the sky. Padaris's sun was nearly to the horizon, moving almost visibly through its 10-hour circuit. Right now, its light was shining straight into the eyes of the approaching airspeeder pilots, but within 5 minutes, it would be completely below the horizon, giving the searchers a clear view again, and leaving behind a dusk where a lightsaber blade would be instantly visible. It was now or never. Pulling his lightsaber from beneath his robe, Luke ignited it, making sure to keep the glowing green blade out of sight of the approaching airspeeders. Using the tip, he carefully made a shallow cut to the right and a few degrees down across the slanting shield barrier. His robe was made of relatively flimsy material, and it took only a second to tear off the left sleeve and wrap it around the fingertips of his left hand. The padded fingers slipped easily into the groove he'd just made, with enough room to slide freely along it. Getting a firm grip, he set the tip of his lightsaber blade into the end of the groove and rolled off the ledge. Supported by his fingertips, the lightsaber held outstretched in his right hand, carving out his path for him as he went. He slid swiftly across and down the shield barrier. It was at the same time exhilarating and terrifying. Memories flooded back, the wind whipping past him as he fell through the center core of the cloud city of Bespin, hanging literally by his fingertips barely minutes later beneath the city. Lying exhausted on the floor in the second Death Star, sensing through his pain the enraged helplessness of the Emperor as Vader hurled him to his death. Beneath his chest and legs, the smooth surface of the shield barrier slid past, marking his rapid approach to the edge and the empty space beyond. Lifting his head, blinking against the wind slapping into his face, he looked over his shoulder. The lethal edge was visible now, racing upward toward him at what felt like breakneck speed. Closer and closer it came. And then, at the last second, he changed the angle of his lightsaber. The downward path of his finger guide shifted toward horizontal, and a few seconds later, he slid smoothly to a halt. For a moment, he just hung there, dangling precariously by one hand as he caught his breath and got his heartbeat back under control. Above him, its edge catching the last rays of the setting sun, he could see the groove he'd just cut, angling up and to his left. Over 100 meters to his left, he estimated. Hopefully far enough to put him outside the Imperial's trap. He'd find out soon enough. Behind him, the sun dipped below the horizon, erasing the thin line of his passage. Moving carefully, trying not to dislodge his straining fingertips, he began to cut a hole through the shield barrier.
Report from the Stormtrooper Commander, Admiral,
Pelion called, grimacing as he read it off his comm display.
Skywalker does not appear to be within the cordon.
I'm not surprised, Thrawn said darkly, glowering at his displays.
I've warned intelligence repeatedly about underestimating the range of Skywalker's sensing abilities. Obviously, they didn't take me seriously.
Pelion swallowed hard.
Yes, sir. But we know he was there, and he couldn't have gotten very far. The Stormtroopers have established a secondary cordon and begun a building-to-building search.
Thrawn took a deep breath, then let it out.
No,
he said, his voice even again.
He didn't go into any of the buildings. Not Skywalker. That little diversion with the decoy and the blaster.
He looked at Pelion.
Up, Captain. He went up, onto the rooftops. The spotters are already sweeping that direction,
Pelion said.
If he's up there, they'll spot him.
Good.
Thrawn tapped a switch on his command console, calling up a holographic map of that section of the mesa.
What about the shield barrier on the west edge of the cordon? Can it be climbed?
Our people here say no.
Pelion shook his head.
Too smooth and too sharply angled, with no lip or other barrier at the bottom. If Skywalker went up that side of the street, he's still there. Or at the bottom of the mesa.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Assign one of the spotters to search that area anyway. What about Skywalker's ship?
Intelligence is still trying to identify which one is his,
Pelion admitted.
There's some problem with the records. We should have it in a few more minutes.
Minutes we no longer have, thanks to their shatterer's carelessness, Thrawn bit out. He's to be demoted 1 grade.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, logging the order. A rather severe punishment, but it could have been far worse. The late Lord Vader would have summarily strangled the man.
The landing field itself is surrounded, of course.
Thrawn rubbed his chin thoughtfully.
A probable waste of time, he said slowly. On the other hand,
he turned his head to gaze out the viewport at the slowly rotating planet.
Pull them off, Captain, he ordered. All except the clone troopers. Leave those on guard near the likeliest possibilities for Skywalker's ship.
Pelion blinked.
Sir?
Thrawn turned back to face him, a fresh glint in those glowing red eyes.
The landing field cordon doesn't have nearly enough Isla Mari to stop a Jedi, Captain. So we won't bother trying. We'll let him get his ship into space, and take him with the Chimera.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, feeling his forehead furrow.
But then,
why leave the clones? Thrawn finished for him. Because while Skywalker is valuable to us, the same is not true of his astromech droid.
He smiled slightly.
Unless, of course, Skywalker's heroic efforts to escape Podarus convince it that this is indeed the main conduit for our clone traffic.
Ah,
Pelion said, finally understanding.
In which case, we find a way to allow the droid to escape back to the rebellion.
Exactly,
Thrawn gestured to Pelion's board.
Orders, Captain.
Yes, sir.
Pelion turned back to his board, feeling a cautious stirring of excitement as he began issuing the Grand Admiral's commands. Maybe this time, Skywalker would finally be theirs. R2 was jabbering nervously when Luke finally charged through the door of their small freighter and slapped the seal behind him. Everything ready to go? He shouted over his shoulder to the droid as he hurried to the cockpit alcove. R2 trilled back an affirmative. Luke dropped into the pilot's seat, giving the instruments a quick once-over as he strapped himself in. Okay, he called back. Here we go. Throwing power to the repulsor lifts, Luke kicked the freighter clear of the ground, wrenching it hard to starboard. A pair of skip-ray blast boats rose with him, moving into tandem pursuit formation as he headed for the edge of the mesa. Watch those skip-rays, R2, Luke called, splitting his own attention between the rapidly approaching city's edge and the airspace above them. The fight with those clone troopers guarding the landing field had been intense, but it had been far too brief to be realistic. Either the Empire had left someone totally incompetent in charge, or they'd let him get to his ship on purpose, carefully herding him into the real trap. The edge of the mesa shot past beneath him. Luke threw a quick glance at the rear display to confirm that he was clear of the city, then punched in the main sublight drive. The freighter shot skyward like a scalded Minock, leaving the pursuing skip race flat-footed in its wake. The official sounding orders to halt that had been blaring from the board turned into a surprised yelp as Luke reached over and shut the comm off. R2, you all right back there? The droid chirped an affirmative, and a question scrolled across Luke's computer screen. They were clones, all right, he confirmed grimly, an uncomfortable shiver running through him. A strange aura that seemed to surround the Empire's new duplicate humans was twice as eerie up close. I'll tell you something else, too, he added to R2. The Imperials knew it was me they were chasing. Those stormtroopers were carrying Isla Mari on their backs. R2 whistled thoughtfully, gave a questioning gurgle. Right, the whole Delta Source thing, Luke agreed, reading the droid's comment. Leia told me that if we couldn't get the leak closed fast, she was going to recommend we move operations out at the Imperial Palace, maybe even off Coruscant entirely. Though if Delta Source was a human or alien spy, instead of some impossibly undetectable listening system in the palace itself, moving anywhere would just be so much wasted effort. From R2's rather pointed silence, Luke guessed the droid was thinking that too. The distant horizon, barely visible as dark planet against dark but starlit sky, was starting to show a visible curvature now. Better start calculating our jump to light speed, R2, he called over his shoulder. We're probably going to have to get out of here in a hurry. He got a confirming beep from the droid's position and turned his attention back to the horizon ahead. A whole fleet of Star Destroyers, he knew, could be lurking below that horizon, out of range of his instruments, waiting for him to get too far from any possible cover to launch their attack. Out of range of his instruments, but perhaps not out of range of Jedi senses. Closing his eyes to slits, flooding his mind with calmness, he stretched out through the Force. He got it an instant before R2's startled warning shrill shattered the air. An Imperial Star Destroyer, all right, but not cutting across his path as Luke had expected. Instead, it was coming up from behind in an atmosphere top-forced orbit that had allowed it to build up speed without sacrificing the advantages of planetary cover. Hang on, Luke shouted, throwing emergency power to the drive. But it was a futile gesture, and both he and the Imperials knew it. The Star Destroyer was coming up fast, its tractor beams already activated and tracking him. Within a handful of seconds, they were going to get him. Or at least, they were going to get the freighter. Luke hit his strap release, opening a disguised panel as he did so, and touching the three switches hidden there. The first switch keyed in the limited autopilot. The second unlocked the aft proton torpedo launcher and started it firing blindly back toward the Star Destroyer. The third activated the freighter's self-destruct. His X-Wing was wedged nose forward in the cargo area behind the cockpit alcove, looking for all the world like some strange metallic animal peering out of its burrow. Luke leaped to the open canopy, coming within an ace of cracking his head on the freighter's low ceiling in the process. R2, already snugged into the X-Wing's droid socket, was jabbering softly to himself as he ran the starfighter's systems from standby to full ready. Even as Luke strapped in and pulled on his flight helmet, the droid signaled they were clear to fly. "Okay," Luke told him, resting his left hand on the special switch that had been added to his control board. "If this is going to work, we're going to have to time it just right. Be ready." Again, he closed his eyes, letting the Force flow through his senses. Once before, on his first attempt to locate the Jedi Master Sabaoth, he tangled like this with the Imperials. An X-Wing against an Imperial Star Destroyer. That, too, had been a deliberate ambush, though he hadn't realized it until Sabaoth's unholy alliance with the Empire had been laid bare. In that battle, skill and luck and the Force had saved him. This time, if the specialists back at Coruscant had done their job right, the luck was already built in. With his mind deeply into the Force, he sensed the locking of the tractor beam a half second before it actually occurred. His hand jabbed the switch, and even as the freighter jerked in the tractor beam's powerful grip, the front end blew apart into a cloud of metallic shards. An instant later, kicked forward by a deck-mounted blast booster, the X-Wing shot through the glittering debris. For a long, heart-stopping moment, it seemed as though the tractor beam was going to be able to maintain its hold despite the obscuring particle fog. Then, all at once, the grip slackened and was gone. "We're free!" Luke shouted back at R2, rolling the X-Wing over and driving hard for deep space. "I'm going evasive. Hang on!" He rolled the X-Wing again, and as he did so, a pair of brilliant green flashes shot past the transparasteel canopy. With their tractor beams outdistanced, the Imperials had apparently decided to settle for shooting him out of the sky. Another barrage of green flames scorched past, and there was a yelp from R2 as something burned through the deflectors to slap against the X-Wing's underside. Reaching out again to the Force, Luke let it guide his hands on the controls. And then, almost without warning, it was time. Reaching to the hyperdrive lever, Luke pulled it back. With a flicker of pseudo-motion, the X-Wing vanished into the safety of hyperspace. The Chimera's turbolaser battery still firing uselessly for a second at where it had been. The batteries fell silent, and Pelion let out a long breath, afraid to look over at Thrawn's command station. It was the second time Skywalker had escaped from this kind of trap, and the last time he'd done so, a man had died for that failure. The rest of the bridge crew hadn't forgotten that either. In the brittle silence, the faint rustling of cloth against seat material was clearly audible as Thrawn stood up.
"Well," the Grand Admiral said, his voice strangely calm, "one must give the rebels full credit for ingenuity. I've seen that trick worked before, but not nearly so effectively."
"Yes, sir,"
Pelion said, trying without success to hide the strain in his voice. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Thrawn looking at him.
"At ease, Captain," the Grand Admiral said soothingly. "Skywalker would have made an interesting package to present to Master Sabaoth, but his escape is hardly cause for major concern. The primary objective of this exercise was to convince the Rebellion that they'd discovered the clone conduit. That objective has been achieved."
The tightness in Pelion's chest began to dissipate. If the Grand Admiral wasn't angry about it...
"That does not mean, however," Thrawn went on, "that the actions of the Chimera's crew should be ignored. Come with me, Captain."
Pelion got to his feet, the tightness returning.
"Yes, sir."
Thrawn led the way to the aft stairway and descended to the starboard crew pit. He walked past the crewers at their consoles, past the officers standing stiffly behind them, and came to a halt at the control station for the starboard tractor beams.
"Your name,"
he said quietly to the young man standing at rigid attention there.
"Ensign Mythal,"
the other said, his face pale but composed, the expression of a man facing his death.
"Tell me what happened, Ensign."
Mythal swallowed.
"Sir, I had just established a positive lock on the freighter when it broke up into a cluster of track-reflective particles. The targeting system tried to lock on all of them at once and went into a loop snarl."
"And what did you do?"
My... Sir, I knew that if I waited for the particles to dissipate normally, the target starfighter would be out of range. So I tried to dissipate them myself by shifting the tractor beam into shear plane mode.
It didn't work. A quiet sigh slipped through Mythel's lips.
No, sir. The target lock system couldn't handle it. It froze up completely.
Yes. Thrawn cocked his head slightly. You've had a few moments now to consider your actions, Ensign. Can you think of anything you should have done instead?
The young man's lip twitched.
No, sir. I'm sorry, but I can't. I don't remember anything in the manual that covers this kind of situation.
Thrawn nodded.
Correct,
he agreed.
There isn't anything. Several methods have been suggested over the past few decades for counteracting the covert shroud gambit, none of which has ever been made practical. Yours was one of the more innovative attempts, particularly given how little time you had to come up with it. The fact that it failed does not in any way diminish that.
A look of cautious disbelief was starting to edge into Mythil's face.
Sir?
The Empire needs quick and creative minds, Ensign, Thrawn said. You're hereby promoted to lieutenant, and your first assignment is to find a way to break a covert shroud. After their success here, the Rebellion may try the gambit again.
Yes, sir,
Mythil breathed, the color starting to come back into his face.
I... thank you, sir.
Congratulations, Lieutenant Mythil.
Thrawn nodded to him, then turned to Pelion.
The bridge is yours, Captain. Resume our scheduled flight. I'll be in my command room if you require me.
Yes, sir,
Pelion managed, and stood there beside the newly minted lieutenant, feeling the stunned awe pervading the bridge as he watched Thrawn leave. Yesterday, the Chimera's crew had trusted and respected the Grand Admiral. After today, they would be ready to die for him. And for the first time in 5 years, Pelion finally knew in the deepest level of his being that the old Empire was gone. The new Empire, with Grand Admiral Thrawn at its head, had been born. The X-Wing hung suspended in the blackness of space, light years away from any solid mass larger than a grain of dust. It was, Luke thought, almost like a replay of that other battle with the Star Destroyer, the one that had left him stranded in deep space and had ultimately led him to Talon Card and Mara Jade at the planet Merkur. Fortunately, appearance was the only thing they had in common. Mostly. From the droid socket behind him came a nervous warble. Come on, R2, relax, Luke soothed him. It's not that bad. We couldn't have made it anywhere near Coruscant without refueling anyway. We'll just have to do it a little sooner, that's all. The response was a sort of indignant grunt. I am taking you seriously, R2, Luke said patiently, keying the listing on his nav display over to the droid. Look, here are all the places we can get to with half our primary power cells blown out. See? For a moment, the droid seemed to mull over the list, and Luke took the opportunity to give it another look himself. There were a lot of choices there, all right. The problem was that many of them wouldn't be especially healthy for a lone New Republic X-Wing to show up at. Half were under direct Imperial control, and most of the others were either leaning that way or keeping their political options open. Still, even on an Imperial-held world, there were sensor gaps a single starfighter could probably slip through. He could put down in some isolated place, make his way on foot to a spaceport, and buy some replacement fuel cells with the Imperial currency he still had left. Getting the cells back to the X-Wing could be a bit of a problem, but nothing he and R2 couldn't solve. R2 chirped a suggestion. Kessel's a possibility, Luke agreed. I don't know, though. Last I heard, Maruth Duel was still in charge there, and Hans never really trusted him. I think we'd do better with Fwilsving, or even... He broke off as one of the planets on the list caught his eye. A planet Leia had programmed into his onboard nav system, almost as an afterthought, before he left on this mission. Honegger. I've got a better idea, R2, Luke said slowly. Let's go visit the Nogri. There was a startled, disbelieving squawk from behind him.
Oh, come on, Luke admonished him. Leia and Chewie went there and got back all right, didn't they? And 3PO, too, he added. You don't want 3PO saying you were afraid to go somewhere he wasn't afraid of, would you?
R2 grunted again.
Doesn't matter whether or not he had a choice, Luke said firmly. The point is that he went.
The droid gave a mournful and rather resigned gurgle.
That's the spirit, Luke encouraged him, keying the nav computer to start the calculation to Honegger. Leia's been wanting me to go visit them anyway. This way we kill two dune lizards with one throw.
R2 gave a single discomfited gurgle and fell silent. And even Luke, who fully trusted Leia's judgment of the Nogri, privately conceded that it was perhaps not the most comforting figure of speech he could have used.
Chapter 5.
The battle data from the Wustry system scrolled to the bottom of the data pad and stopped.
I still don't believe it, Leia said, shaking her head as she laid the data pad back down on the table. If the Empire had a superweapon that could shoot through planetary shields, they'd be using it in every system they attacked. It has to be a trick or illusion of some kind.
I agree,
Mon Mothma said quietly.
The question is, how do we convince the rest of the Council and the Assemblage of that? Not to mention the outer systems themselves?
We must solve the puzzle of what happened at Yukio and Wustry,
Admiral Akbar said, his voice even more gravelly than usual.
And we must solve it quickly.
Leia picked up her datapad again, throwing a quick look across the table at Akbar as she did so. The Mon Calamari's huge eyes seemed unusually heavy-lidded. His normal salmon color noticeably faded. He was tired, desperately so. And with the Empire's grand offensive still rolling toward them across the galaxy, he wasn't likely to be getting much rest anytime soon. Neither were any of the rest of them, for that matter.
We already know that Grand Admiral Thrawn has a talent for understanding the minds of his opponents, she reminded the others. Could he have predicted how quickly both the Yukians and the Wustroids would be to surrender?
As opposed to, say, the Filvians?
Mon Mothma nodded slowly.
Interesting point. That might indicate that the illusion is one that can't be maintained for very long.
Or that the power requirements are exceedingly high,
Akbar added.
If the Empire has learned a method for focusing non-visible energy against a shield, it could conceivably weaken a section long enough to fire a turbo laser blast through the opening. But such a thing would take a tremendous power output.
And should also show up as an energy stress on the shield,
Mon Mothma pointed out.
None of our information suggests that was the case.
Our information may be wrong,
Akbar retorted. He threw a brief glare at Counselor Borst Phalia.
Or it may have been manipulated by the Empire,
he added pointedly.
Such things have happened before.
Leia looked at Phalia, too, wondering if the thinly veiled insult to his people would finally drive the Bothan out of his self-imposed silence. But Phalia just sat there, his eyes on the table, his cream-colored fur motionless, not speaking, not reacting, perhaps not even thinking. Eventually, she supposed, he would regain his verbal courage and a measure of his old political strength. But for now, with his false denunciation of Akbar still fresh in everyone's minds, he was in the middle of his species' version of penance. Leia's stomach tightened in frustration. Once again, the Bothan's inflexible, all-or-nothing approach to politics was running squarely counter to the New Republic's best interests. A few months earlier, Phalia's accusations against Akbar had wasted valuable time and energy. Now, when the Council needed every bit of insight and resourcefulness it could muster, including Phalia's, he was playing the silent martyr. There were days, and long, dark nights, when Leia privately despaired of ever holding the New Republic together.
You're right, of course, Admiral,
Mon Mothma said with a sigh.
We need more information, and we need it quickly.
Talon Card's organization is still our best chance, Leia said. They've got the contacts both here and on the Imperial side. And from what Luke said in his last message, Card sounded interested.
We can't afford to wait on the convenience of a smuggler,
Akbar growled, his mouth tendrils stiffening with distaste.
What about General Bel Iblis? He was fighting alone against the Empire for several years.
The General has already turned his intelligence contacts over to us,
Mon Mothma said, a muscle in her cheek twitching.
So far, we're still integrating them into our own system.
I wasn't referring to his contacts,
Akbar said.
I meant the General himself. Why isn't he here?
Leia looked at Mon Mothma, her stomach tightening again. Garm Bel Iblis had been one of the early forces behind the consolidation of individual resistance units into the all-encompassing Rebel Alliance, and for years had formed a shadowy triad of leadership with Mon Mothma and Leia's own adoptive father, Bail Organa. But when Organa died with his people in the Death Star's attack on Alderaan, and as Mon Mothma began subsequently to draw more and more power to herself, Bel Iblis had left the Alliance and struck out on his own. Since then, he had continued his private war against the Empire, until, almost by accident, he had crossed paths with fellow Corellian Han Solo. It was Han's urgent request that had brought Bel Iblis and his force of 6 dreadnoughts to the New Republic's aid at the Katana battle. Mon Mothma, speaking words about burying past differences, had welcomed Bel Iblis back, and had then turned around and sent him to bolster the defenses in the outer sectors of the New Republic, as far from Coruscant as he could possibly have gone. Leia was not yet ready to ascribe vindictiveness to Mon Mothma's decision, but there were others in the New Republic hierarchy who remembered Bel Iblis and his tactical genius, and not all of them were quite so willing to give Mon Mothma the benefit of the doubt.
The General's expertise is needed at the battlefront,
Mon Mothma said evenly.
His expertise is also needed here,
Akbar retorted. But Leia could hear the resignation in his voice. Akbar himself had just returned from a tour of the Farfin and Dolomar defenses, and would be leaving in the morning for Dantooine. With the Imperial War Machine on the move, the New Republic couldn't afford the luxury of burying their best line commanders away in ground-side offices.
I understand your concerns,
Mon Mothma said more gently.
When we get the situation out there stabilized, I fully intend to bring General Bel Iblis back and put him in charge of tactical planning. If we get the situation stabilized,
Leia amended silently, again feeling her stomach tighten. So far the offensive was going uniformly the Empire's way. The thought broke off in mid-stride, a sudden belated awareness flooding in on her. No, it wasn't her stomach that was tightening. Akbar was speaking again.
Excuse me.
Leia cut him off, getting carefully to her feet. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to get down to medical.
Mon Mothma's eyes widened. The twins?
Leia nodded.
I think they're on their way.
The walls and ceiling of the birth room were a warm tan color, with a superimposed series of shifting lights that had been synchronized with Leia's own brainwave patterns. Theoretically, it was supposed to help her relax and concentrate. As a practical matter, Leia had already decided that after 10 hours of looking at it, the technique had pretty well lost its effectiveness.
Another contraction came. The hardest one yet.
Automatically, Leia reached out with the Force, using the methods Luke had taught her to hold off pain coming from protesting muscles. If nothing else, this whole birth process was giving her the chance to practice her Jedi techniques, and not just those having to do with pain control.
It's all right,
she thought, soothingly toward the small minds within her.
It's all right. Mother's here.
It didn't really help. Caught in forces they couldn't comprehend, their tiny bodies being squeezed and pushed as they were driven slowly toward the unknown. Their undeveloped minds were fluttering with fear. Though to be perfectly fair, their father wasn't in much better shape.
You all right?
Han asked for the umpteenth time since they'd come in here. He squeezed her hand a little more tightly, also for the umpteenth time, in sympathetic tension with her hunching shoulders.
I'm still fine,
Leia assured him. Her shoulders relaxed as the contraction ended, and she gave his hand a squeeze in return.
You don't look so good, though.
Han made a face at her.
It's past my bedtime, he said dryly.
That must be it,
Leia agreed. Han had been as nervous as a tauntaun on ball bearings ever since the labor started in earnest. But he was making a manly effort not to show it. More for her sake, Leia suspected, than for any damage such an admission might do to his image.
Sorry.
Don't worry about it.
Han threw a look to the side where the medic and the two MD droids were hovering around the business end of the birthbed.
Looks like we're getting close, sweetheart.
Count on it!
Leia agreed. The last word strangled off as another contraction took her attention.
Oh!
Han's anxiety level jumped another notch.
You all right?
Leia nodded, throat muscles momentarily too tight to speak through.
Hold me, Han!
She breathed when she could talk again.
Just hold me.
I'm right here,
he said quietly, sliding his free hand into a comfortable grip under her shoulder. She hardly heard him. Deep within her, the small lives that she and Han had created were starting to move. And abruptly, their fluttering fear had become full-blown terror.
Don't be afraid,
she thought at them.
Don't be afraid. It'll be all right. I'm here. Soon you'll be with me.
She wasn't really expecting a reaction. The twins' minds were far too undeveloped to understand anything as abstract as words or the concept of future events. But she continued anyway, wrapping them in their fear as best she could in her love and peace and comfort. There was another contraction. The inexorable movement toward the outside world continued. And then, to Leia's everlasting joy, one of the tiny minds reached back to her, touching her in a way that neither twin had ever responded to her non-verbal caresses before. The rising fear slowed in its advance, and Leia had the sudden mental image of a baby's hand curled tightly around her finger.
Yes, she told the infant. I'm your mother, and I'm here.
The tiny mind seemed to consider that. Leia continued her assurances, and the mind shifted a little away from her, as if the infant's attention had been drawn somewhere else. A good sign, she decided, if it was able to be distracted from what was happening to it. And then, to her amazement, the second mind's panic also began to fade. The second mind, which to the best of her knowledge had not yet even noticed her presence. Later, in retrospect, the whole thing would seem obvious, if not completely inevitable. But at that moment, the revelation was startling enough to send a shiver through the core of Leia's soul. The twins, growing together in the Force, even as they'd grown together within her, had somehow become attuned to each other. Attuned in a way and to a depth that Leia knew she herself would never entirely share. It was at that same time, one of the proudest and yet one of the most poignant moments of Leia's life. To get such a glimpse into the future, to see her children growing and strengthening themselves in the Force, and to know that there would be a part of their lives together that she would never share. The contraction eased, the grand and bittersweet vision of the future fading into a small nugget of ache in a corner of her mind, an ache that was made all the worse by the private shame that, in all of that flood of selfish emotion, it hadn't even occurred to her that Han would be able to share even less of their lives than she would. And suddenly, through the mental haze, a bright light seemed to explode in her eyes. Reflexively, she clutched harder at Han's hand.
What?
It's coming,
Han yelped, gripping back.
First one's halfway out.
Leia blinked, the half-imagined light vanishing as her mind fumbled free of her contact with her children. Her children, whose eyes had never had to deal with anything brighter than a dim, diffuse glow.
Turn that light down, she gasped. It's too bright. The children's eyes. It's all right,
the medic assured her.
Their eyes will adjust, all right? One last push.
And then, seemingly without warning, the first part was suddenly over.
Got one,
Han told her. his voice sounding strangely breathless. He craned his neck.
It's our daughter.
He looked back at Leia, the tension in his face plastered over with the lopsided grin she knew so well.
Jaina.
Leia nodded.
Jaina,
she repeated. Somehow the names they'd decided on never sounded quite the same as they did right now.
What about Jason?
Offhand, I'd say he's anxious to join his sister,
the medic said dryly.
Get ready to push. He looks like he's trying to crawl out on his own. Okay? Push!
Leia took a deep breath. Finally, after 10 hours of labor, after 9 months of pregnancy, the end was finally in sight.
No, not the end. The beginning.
They laid the twins in her arms a few minutes later. And as she looked first at them and then up at Han, she felt a sense of utter peace settle over her. Out among the stars, there might be a war going on. But for here and for now, all was right with the universe.
Watch it, Rogue Leader!
The voice of Rogue 10 snapped in Wedge's ear.
You've picked up a tail!
Got it,
Wedge told him, cutting his X-Wing hard over. The TIE interceptor shot past, spitting laser fire as he went, and attempted to match Wedge's maneuver. Blurring and barely half a second behind the Imperial, a pursuing X-Wing blew him into a cloud of flaming dust.
Thanks, Rogue 8,
Wedge said, blowing a drop of sweat from the tip of his nose and checking his scanners. Temporarily, at least, it looked like their little corner of the melee was in the clear. Putting his X-Wing into a slow turn, he gave the overall battle scene a quick assessment. It was worse than he'd feared. Worse, for that matter, than it had been even 5 minutes ago. 2 more Victory-class Star Destroyers had appeared from hyperspace, dropping into mauling position at point-blank range from one of their 3 remaining Calamari Star Cruisers. And at the rate the Star Destroyers were pouring turbolaser fire into it,
Rogue Squadron, change course to 22 Mark 8,
he ordered, turning onto the intercept heading, and wondering how in blazes the Imperials had managed this one. Making so precise a jump was difficult under ideal circumstances. To do so into the heat and confusion of a battle should have been well nigh impossible. Just 1 more example of the Empire's incredible new talent for coordinating their forces. There was a warning twitter from the astromech droid riding in the socket behind him. They were now registering too close to a large mass to jump to light speed. Wedge glanced around with a frown. Finally spotted the interdictor cruiser hovering off in the distance, keeping well out of the main battle itself. Apparently the Imperials didn't want any of the new Republic ships sneaking out of the party early. Dead ahead, some of the Victory Star Destroyer's TIE fighters were sweeping up to meet them.
Porkins formation!
Wedge ordered his team.
Watch out for flankers! Star Cruiser Orthovan, this is Rogue Squadron. We're coming in.
Stay there, Rogue Leader,
a gravelly Mon Calamari voice said.
We're too badly overmatched. You can't help us.
Wedge gritted his teeth. The Mon Cal was probably right.
We're going to try anyway,
he told the other. The advancing TIE fighters were almost in range now.
Hang on.
Rogue Squadron, this is Bill Iblis,
a new voice cut in.
Break off your attack. On my mark, cut 30 degrees to port side.
With an effort, Wedge suppressed the urge to say something that would probably have earned him a court-martial. On his list, as long as the ship was in one piece, there was still hope of saving it. Apparently, the great General Bell Iblis had decided otherwise.
Copy, General, he sighed. Rogue Squadron, stand by.
Rogue Squadron, mark.
Obediently, reluctantly, Wedge swung his X-Wing to the side. The TIE fighter shifted course to follow, seemed to suddenly get flustered, and with a roar that carried clearly even through the tenuous gases of interplanetary space, an assault formation of A-Wings shot through the space Rogue Squadron had just exited. The TIE fighters, already in motion to match the X-Wing's maneuver, were caught flat-footed. Before they could get back into barricade position, the A-Wings were past them, heading at full throttle for the embattled Star Cruiser.
Okay, Rogue Squadron,
Bell Iblis said.
Your turn. Clear their backs for them.
Wedge grinned tightly. He should have known better of Bell Iblis.
Copy, General. Rogue Squadron, let's take them.
And then, prepare to retreat.
Wedge blinked, the grin fading. Retreat? Turning his X-Wing toward the TIE fighters, he looked back at the main battle area. A few minutes earlier, he'd realized the situation had looked bad. Now it was on the edge of disaster. Bail Iblis's force was down to barely two-thirds of the 15 capital ships he'd started with most of those huddled into a last-ditch bastion formation. Surrounding it, systematically battering at its defenses, were over 20 Star Destroyers and Dreadnoughts. Wedge looked back at the approaching TIE fighters, and beyond them, to the Interdictor Cruiser. The Interdictor Cruiser, whose gravity well projectors were keeping the beleaguered battle force from escaping to light speed. And then they were on the TIE fighters, and there was no more time for thought. The battle was sharp, but short. The sudden appearance of the A-Wings from Rogue Squadron's shadow had apparently thrown the TIE fighters just enough off stride. 3 minutes, maybe four, and Rogue Squadron was again in the clear.
What now, Rogue Leader?
Rogue Two asked as the squadron reformed through the debris. Mentally crossing his fingers, Wedge looked back at the Orthoband. If Bail Iblis's gamble hadn't worked... It had! The A-Wing slash had distracted the Victory Star Destroyer's attack just enough for the Star Cruiser to catch its breath and go back on the offensive. The Orthoband had both its extensive turbo laser and ion cannon batteries going, scrambling the Imperial systems and pummeling away at their hulls. Even as Wedge watched, a geyser of superheated gas erupted from the midsection of the nearer Star Destroyer, sending the ship rotating ponderously away. Pulling under the derelict's hull, the Star Cruiser moved away from the battle and headed for the Interdictor Cruiser. Change course for the Orthoband, Wedge ordered. They may need backup. The words were barely out of his mouth when, shooting in from light speed, a pair of dreadnoughts suddenly appeared at the Orthoband's flank. Wedge held his breath. But the Star Cruiser was already moving too fast for the dreadnoughts to get more than a wild shot at it. It passed them without pausing, and as they turned to follow it, the A-Wing squadron reenacted their earlier slash maneuver. Once again, the distraction's effectiveness was vastly out of proportion to the actual damage inflicted. By the time the starfighters broke off, the Orthoband was beyond any chance the dreadnoughts might have to catch up, and the Imperials knew it. Behind Wedge, the astromech droid beeped. The pseudo-gravity field was fading away as the distant Interdictor Cruiser shut down its gravity well projectors in preparation for its own escape to light speed. The Interdictor Cruiser! And belatedly, the explanation struck him. He'd been wrong. Those Victory Star Destroyers hadn't needed to rely on any half-mystical coordination technique to jump in so close to the Star Cruiser. All they'd had to do was fly in along a hyperspace vector supplied to them by the Interdictor Cruiser and wait until the edge of the gravity well cone yanked them back into normal space. Wedge felt his lip twist. Overestimating the enemy's abilities, he'd been taught a long time ago, could be just as dangerous as underestimating them. It was a lesson he would have to start remembering.
Interdictor grav field is down.
Bail Iblis's voice came in his ear.
All units, acknowledge, and prepare to retreat on your marks.
Rogue Squadron, copy, Wedge said, grimacing as he turned onto their pre-planned escape vector and looked back at what was left of the main battle group. There was no doubt about it. They'd been beaten, and beaten badly. And about all Bail Iblis's legendary tactical skill had been able to do had been to keep the defeat from turning into a rout. And the price was likely to be yet another system lost to the Empire.
Rogue Squadron, go!
Copy, Wedge sighed, and pulled back the hyperspace lever. And as the stars flared into star lines, a sobering thought occurred to him. For the foreseeable future, at least, underestimating the Empire was not likely to be all that much of a problem.
Chapter 6.
The Starline shrank back into stars, and the wild card was back in normal space. Straight ahead was the tiny white dwarf sun of the Chazwa system, not all that distinguishable from the bright background stars around it. Nearby, and a little to one side, a mostly dark circle edged by a slender lighted crescent, was the planet Chazwa itself. Scattered around it in the darkness of space, the exhaust glows of perhaps 50 ships could be seen, both incoming and outgoing. Most were freighters and bulk cruisers, taking advantage of Chazwa's central transshipment location. A few were clearly Imperial warships.
Well, here we are,
Ave said conversationally from the co-pilot station.
Incidentally, Card, I'd like to go on record as saying this is an insane idea.
Perhaps, Card conceded, shifting course toward the planet and checking his displays.
Good. The rest of the group had made it in all right. But if the Empire's clone transport route does indeed run through Orua's sector, the Chazwa garrison should have records of the operation. Possibly even the origin point, if someone was careless.
I wasn't referring to the details of the raid, Ave said. I meant that it was crazy for us to be getting involved in the first place. It's the New Republic's war, not ours. Let them chase it down.
If I could trust them to do so, I would, Card said, peering out the starboard viewport. Another freighter seemed to be sliding slowly in the wild card's general direction. But I'm not sure they're up to the task. Aves grunted.
I still don't buy Skywalker's numbers. Seems to me that if you could grow stable clones that fast, the old clone masters would have done it.
Perhaps they did, Card pointed out. I don't think any information on the cloning techniques of that era has survived. Everything I've ever seen has come from the much earlier pre-war experiments.
Yeah, well, Ave shook his head. I'd still rather sit the whole thing out.
We may discover we don't have a choice in the matter. Card gestured to the freighter still moving up on them. We seem to have a caller. Would you pull up an ID on him?
Sure.
Aves threw a quick look at the freighter, then turned to his board.
Not registering as any ship I've ever heard of.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, they've altered their ID. Simple transponder overlay, looks like. Let's see if Kent's magic decoder package can untangle it.
Card nodded. The mention of Ghent's name sending his thoughts flicking briefly across the galaxy to Coruscant, and the two associates he'd left there under New Republic care. If the timetable their medical people had given him was correct, Mara should be about recovered by now. She should be trying to get in touch with him soon. And he made a mental note to check in with the contact pipeline as soon as they were finished here.
Got it,
Ave said triumphantly.
Well, well. I do believe it's an old friend of yours, Card. The Kern's pride. The slightly less than honorable Samuel Tomas Gillespie proprietor.
Is it now?
Card said, eyeing the ship pacing them 100 meters away.
I suppose we'd better see what he wants.
He keyed for a tight beam transmission.
This is Talon Card calling the Kern's pride,
he said.
Don't just sit there, Gillespie. Say hello.
Hello, Card.
A familiar voice came back.
You don't mind if I figure out who I'm talking to before I say hello, do you?
Not at all. Nice little overlay on your ship ID, by the way.
Obviously could have been nicer. We weren't even close to slicing yours yet. What are you doing here?
I was about to ask you the same thing. I was under the impression you'd been planning to retire.
I did. Out of the business for good. And thanks for everything. Bought myself a big chunk of land on a nice little out-of-the-way world where I could watch the trees grow and stay out of everything that smelled like trouble. Place called Yukio. Ever hear of it?
Beside Card, Ave shook his head and muttered something under his breath.
I seem to remember hearing that name recently, yes. Were you there for the Imperial attack?
I was there for the attack, the surrender, and all the occupation I could stomach. Matter of fact, I had about as good a front row seat to the bombardment as you could get. It was pretty spectacular, I'll tell you that.
It could be profitable as well,
Card said, thinking hard. As far as he knew, the New Republic still didn't have a handle on what exactly the Empire had done at Yukio. Hard data on the attack could be invaluable to their tactical people, as well as commanding a hefty fee for both witness and finder.
I don't suppose you took any readings during the attack.
I got a little from the bombardment part of it. The data card from my macro binoculars. Why?
There's a good chance I can find you a buyer for it. It might compensate somewhat for your lost property.
I doubt your buyer's got that much to spend. You wouldn't have believed it, Card. You really wouldn't. I mean, we're not talking Sfeverin here. But even Yukio should have taken them a little longer to overrun.
The Empire's had a lot of practice overrunning worlds, Card reminded him. You're lucky you made it out at all.
You got that one right. Fawn and Rappaport popped me out half a jump ahead of the stormtroopers, and half a jump behind the workers they sent to turn my land into a crop farm. I'm telling you, that new clone system they've got going is really creepy.
Card threw a look at Aves. How so?
What do you mean, how so? I don't happen to think people ought to come off an assembly line, thanks. And if they did, I'm sure his Minox wouldn't put the Empire in charge of the factory. You should have seen the guys they had manning the roadblocks. Put a shiver right straight through you.
I don't doubt it. What are your plans after leaving Chazwa?
I don't hardly have any plans before I get there. I was hoping to get in touch with Brask's old contact man here. See if they'd be interested in taking us on. Why? You got something better?
Possibly. We can start by sending that macrobinocular data card onto my buyer, drawing payment for you against a credit line I have set up with him. After that, I have another project in mind, which you might find both interesting...
We got company, Aves cut him off. Two Imperial ships heading this way. Looks like Lancer-class frigates.
Uh-oh. Maybe we didn't get off Yukio as clean as I thought.
I think it more likely that we're their target, Card said, feeling his lip twist as he keyed an evasion course into the helm. It's been nice talking to you, Gillespie. If you want to continue the conversation, meet me in 8 days at the Trogon system. You know the place.
I can make it if you can. If you can't, don't make it too easy for him.
Card broke the contact.
Hardly, he murmured. All right, here we go. Nice and easy.
He eased the wild card into a shallow portside drop, trying to make it look as if they were planning to cut past the planet itself and pick up a new hyperspace vector.
Do I alert the others? Aves asked.
Not yet, Card said,
giving his displays a quick look and setting the nav computer to work, calculating their jump to light speed.
I'd rather abort the mission and try again later than tangle with a pair of Lancers who are serious about fighting.
Yeah, Aves said slowly. Card, they're not changing course.
Card looked up. Aves was right. Neither Lancer had so much as twitched. They were still heading on their original vector.
Straight for the Kern's pride.
He looked at Aves to find the other looking back at him.
What do we do?
Aves asked. Card looked back at the Imperial ships. The wild card was a long way from being helpless in a fight, and his people were some of the best. But with weaponry that had been designed to take out enemy starfighters, two Lancers would be better than an even match for the group he'd brought to Chazwa. As he watched, the Kern's pride suddenly made its move. Rolling into a sort of mutated dropkick Koyogran maneuver, it took off at high speed at a sharp angle from its original course. The Lancers, not fooled a bit by the ploy, were right behind it, which left the wild card completely in the clear. They could continue on to Chazwa, hit the garrison records, and be out before the Lancers could make it back. Fast, clean, and certainly preferable as far as the New Republic was concerned. But Gillespie was an old acquaintance, and on Card's scale, a fellow smuggler placed higher than any interstellar government he didn't belong to.
Apparently Gillespie didn't get off Yukio as cleanly as he thought, he commented, bringing the wild card around and keying for the intercom. Lacton, Chin, Corvus, fire up the turbo lasers. We're going in.
What about the other ships?
Aves asked, as he activated the deflector shields and punched up a tactical display.
Let's get the Lancer's attention first, Card said.
The 3 men at the turbo laser signaled ready. Taking a deep breath, he threw power to the drive. The Lancer's commander wasn't anyone's fool. Even as the wild card drove toward them, one of the Imperial ships broke off its pursuit of the Kern's Pride and turned to confront this new threat.
I think we've got their attention, Abe said tightly. Can I call the others into the party yet?
Go ahead,
Card told him, keying his own comm for a tight beam to the Kern's Pride.
Gillespie, this is Card.
Yeah, I see.